Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone has been having a wonderful week so far. A lot of stuff that I want to get into on the podcast today. I'm going to be recapping this past weekend's box office. I'm also going to be talking about a few trending trailers that have actually been coming out over this last week and so much more. But the first thing that I do want to talk about on the podcast today is to kind of recap and review, go over to the TV corner of the Sam Bissell Podcast and talk about a little show that debuted last night on Disney Plus at a specific time, specifically being at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that is the latest Star Wars show on Disney Plus, which is Ahsoka, which stars Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, the late great Ray Stevenson, and was created, written, and some episodes directed by the Star Wars maestro himself in Dave Filoni. And this has been a show that I've very much been looking forward to. This is very much a sequel, pseudo sequel to some episodes of The Mandalorian, to the Book of Boba Fett. If you follow the character of Ahsoka Tano, she is somebody who's been around the universe for a long, long time, appearing in animated shows created by both George Lucas and Dave Filoni in Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, and this show, Ahsoka, finds the Jedi and Rebel in a situation where she is kind of looking for a villainous presence that is going around the galaxy right now, and she utilizes the work and help of friends who, if you followed the TV shows of Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars The Clone Wars, help her in these kind of situations, and we're off on this journey with Ahsoka Tano. And this is a show that I've very much been looking forward to. I love the character of Ahsoka. I love Rosario Dawson. I'm somebody who loved the casting of her in this role in the previous two roles that we've seen her in within playing the role of Ahsoka Tano. She's been amazing as this character, and I've been really excited to see where this show can go. And I also like the fact that we're seeing Dave Filoni take this character and this world of Star Wars and expand it in different ways. So I've been very much looking forward to the show, really have liked the trailers that have come out so far. And so this one was very much on my radar, and the first two episodes dropped last night. And overall, my initial reaction and thoughts to Ahsoka, the show so far, is I think it's a very solid, very good start for this show so far. Not the best thing in the whole wide world, but I think for kind of setting the stage for where we're going with this story, with this show, I think it is a very good start in introducing, reintroducing these characters to fans that have known them, and even to some casual fans that maybe haven't noticed these characters before. I think it's a great introduction to them as well. I thought Rosario Dawson, I thought Natasha Leah Bizzarrato was amazing as Sabine. I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead was amazing as Harrison Dula. And I think these three incredible performers did a very good job of, I think, establishing themselves as these versions of these characters and giving them background and authority that we really haven't seen in Star Wars characters before. And so they gave me an initial stamp right away, and I'm excited to see more of their journey. And I think for Rosario Dawson, I think the way that she's able to give Ahsoka this kind of stoicness, and you don't really see a lot of what's going on with her and her emotions in her head, but the way that she plays it, she's still able to give you the things that she's feeling as well. And also, I think what Dave Filoni has always talked about with this show and what he loves about Star Wars is that kind of Akira Kurosawa inspiration, the samurai kind of pseudo like abilities that Jedi do have, with what George Lucas always drew inspiration from, or one of the inspirations from Star Wars, is very much an infliction of what Dave Filoni wants to do with his Star Wars, whether it's in the episode that Ahsoka appears in within Mandalorian or in these first two episodes so far. Those strengths, those themes, those inspirations are very much a part of these first two episodes. And I think within her performance, she does an amazing job as well. I think Natasha Liu does an awesome job as well as Sabine. And she's one of the characters that I want to see moving forward in this new area that we know the character to be in right now. And I like the relationship, kind of the apprentice-master relationship of Ahsoka and Sabine. And that's not really giving any spoilers. That's very much been in the featurettes, the promos for this show so far. So I really like their dynamic as well. And then again, Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera has been amazing to kind of see, and I want to see more of her character moving forward. And then again, I said it before, but Ray Stevenson, he's playing kind of the Sith villain in this one, at least. That's the interpretation that I get for his character. Who knows if there's any kind of twists and turns that will happen in subsequent episodes to follow, but it's great to see him in this role, and it's just a shame that he passed before this show came out, because I think everyone has been reacting positively to his performance and the impression he's able to give in the show so far is really, really good, and I'm excited to see where his character goes moving forward. And one of the things that I really did like that Filoni did, because Dave Filoni directed the first episode, Steph Green directed the second episode, but Filoni wrote every single one of these scripts. The thing that I really get about this show is also the fact that it feels very theatrical, and it looks theatrical as well. It just has that feeling of, even though I'm watching a Star Wars show, it feels like it's a Star Wars movie cut up into different episodes, really, and it's telling this one story. And one of the things that I heard about in the first reactions, initial reviews for this show, is that the story is very focused, and I do agree with that after watching the first two installments. It's very much setting up the groundwork for, I think, this main story that we're going to be going on throughout the 8-episode arc of Ahsoka, and it really is kind of setting the stage for what we're going to see. And I know some people have been kind of complaining about the first episode, specifically the pacing of it, and that it feels a little bit kind of dragged out, and it feels a little bit that's kind of bogged down in a lot of setup and not really kind of moving the action story forward. And I kind of disagree with that. I like the way that Filoni in the first episode establishes the characters, some of these planets and worlds, but the story, and gives you time to marinate with these characters. And again, going back to knowing these characters, and one of the things that I think a lot of people were worried about in trying to get this to be seen by the biggest audience possible is that a lot of these characters are featured in other installments of Star Wars. How would general audiences be able to catch up with that? And I do think that if you do know Rebels and you do know Clone Wars, you get a lot more out of this in terms of the Easter eggs and kind of spotting out different things that you would notice. But I think if you're just a casual Star Wars fan or just an audience member wanting to check this show out, I do think that you will be able to catch up with these characters, and enough time has passed in terms of the timeline within between Rebels and Ahsoka that it's a new adventure that we're going on with these characters, and the background that Filoni is able to give within the dialogue, I think, allows for people to kind of catch up with these characters in real time as the episode is playing out. So I didn't feel like, for me myself, who knows a little bit about Rebels but didn't know a whole lot, didn't watch every single episode, I was able to still maintain and follow what was going on. And I think it helped establish the players that are on this field and where we're going to be going throughout the next couple of installments in the coming weeks. Also, another thing that I really did like about this, and it was something that I actually quite enjoyed, even though season 3 Mandalorian was okay, not as good as season 1 and 2, but one of the things I really did like, and it came in episode 3 of season 3 of Mando, and it showcased itself throughout the season of Mandalorian as well this past year, was the introspections of the New Republic and seeing what this new order of the galaxy is like coming off of the fall of the Empire from the original trilogy. And we didn't really get glimpses of that between Book of Boba Fett, or even we got snippets of it here and there in the first two seasons of Mando, but they really go into it in Mandalorian season 3. And I feel like in these first two episodes, Dave Filoni really is establishing what this world is looking like right now and the remnants of the Empire and where they're going and what it could be leading up to in coming episodes and potentially evolving into what Dave Filoni's Star Wars movie is going to look like in the next couple of years, but also kind of plants the seeds for where we go with the sequel trilogy and the rise of the Forced Order and the New Republic and the Resistance. You could see the seeds being planted in these shows, in particular these two episodes, of where things could go with the New Republic and still people residing within the Empire as well, and the loyalty that they serve to it still, even though there is this new regime that is in place throughout the galaxy. So seeing all those new aspects of the New Republic was very interesting. I'm excited to see more of that moving forward. Another thing that I thought was really good, and I think Star Wars fans in general will be happy to hear about this, is that there's a lot of lightsaber action within these first two episodes alone. And that was one of the things that I wanted to see more of. And I'm a big fan of something like Andor, and I don't need to see lightsaber action all the time, but when I do get it, I love to see it. And I think Dave Filoni, again, going to those Akira Kurosawa inspirations, Last Samurai, or into Seven Samurai, all these different inspirations of martial arts, like kinetic kind of techniques, sword fighting techniques, all really went into these first two episodes when it came to the action. I thought there was an interesting space sequence as well, not to get into it, that was really cool. And so when Dave was directing the first episode, I really was able to see that this guy is really truly evolving as a filmmaker. And then going back to more of the theatrical feel of these episodes so far, and Steph Green was able to carry that forward in episode two. But that feeling of, I felt like I could watch Ahsoka while I was watching it on my laptop, I could watch it on the big screen and still have a great experience with surround sound, the biggest screen possible, and enjoy it. So I think this episode one gave me a good indication of where Dave Filoni is at as a director. And he just keeps getting better and better with each and every installment that he does. And so I'm excited to see him do another episode in Ahsoka and see where it takes him moving forward. And I do think setting him up with a Star Wars film was the smart decision. And this show, whether it's a season or multiple seasons, is I think going to be the biggest leap that we're going to see in Dave Filoni as a director in what he wants to do with Star Wars as well. And I think just overall, I'm really excited to see more of this. Again, I think the first two episodes did a great job of laying down the story and where we're going to go from here. And it seems like it is very much telling a central story that is going to be kind of building itself up as we move forward in these next couple of weeks. So I'm really excited. I really had a lot of great things about this show. I didn't feel any of the CGI. I didn't feel like there was anything kind of out of place. I didn't feel like the worlds were kind of constrained, where something like Obi-Wan Kenobi, even though I like aspects of that show, it definitely felt like it was limited in its space, and it felt like it was shot on a surround sound stage in a way, and it felt like it was shot on something like the volume. Whereas as of right now, with these first two episodes of Ahsoka, it feels a little bit more wider in the galaxy and the planets that we're on. Like, we're not confined to this one city. We're not confined to this one place. We can explore different avenues of planets and their surroundings, really. And I felt that in these first two episodes. And I'm hoping to feel that more in episode three, episode four, episode five to come as well. So really good start for this show. And I'm excited about it. And I'm hoping that this show can find some success, because Star Wars certainly needs it right now. And one of the things that I think will help in that, actually, kind of transitioning over to something that I think is a logistically smart idea that Disney and Star Wars announced a couple days before the drop of the first two Ahsoka episodes last night, and that was the fact that instead of the episodes kind of following the usual tradition of Disney Plus shows coming on Wednesday nights or mornings if you're on the East Coast, they're dropping them earlier the day beforehand. So right now for Ahsoka, it's going to be playing out on primetime TV, or on kind of the web waves, if you will, of streaming, where Ahsoka is going to be coming out at a specific time. So it'll be 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I think the great thing about that is it can become event TV viewing again, because one of the things that, even though some of these shows were events and people would stay up late to watch them, whether it was midnight on the West Coast, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, for the East Coasters, I mean, for me, I'm still in bed or potentially about to wake up for work an hour later or so. I'm not going to have time to watch Ahsoka when it initially comes out on the streaming service, on the platform. And so I just think it's a great idea where you can watch the episode on a Tuesday night, and then the next couple of days talk about it with people who want to watch. And I think it gives people a window of being able to watch a show before the next day or the day after to see it, really. And I think the overall great idea would be reverting all this back to Fridays and having it maybe be a 9 p.m. Eastern time window or something like that, or even on a Thursday you come out with an episode Thursday night, going into Friday, people go into work or they're talking with their friends, coworkers, talk about the show if they want to do that. So you're building up that buzz and that creative community. And if a show is enticing enough and it warrants a kind of a conversation outside of the viewing, that's where it'll pick up a little bit. And I think Disney Plus needs that back with their shows. I mean, they had it with the first two seasons of Mandalorian. They had it with shows like WandaVision and Loki, but it's kind of died down in the last year, year and a half. And I think they need that back. And that's one of the things that I think was enticing to people with Disney, with these shows on the platforms, with that you would be able to create a kind of Game of Thrones scenario nine times out of 10, but it hasn't happened in recent memory. And so I think they need to get that back. And I think Ahsoka is the best way to do that right now. And hopefully this will be the start of that new era of Disney Plus watching moving forward, and that this new strategy can translate to success in the numbers that Disney sees on their platform when looking at the analytical numbers for a show like Ahsoka. So I'm very interested to see what the numbers look like for the show in terms of its kind of ratings or number ratings, however they look at the analytics of streaming shows and streaming services. It's going to be very interesting to see. But overall, again, I really did enjoy the first two episodes, and hopefully it creates conversation starters for people to go and check them out as well. What did you guys think about the first episode of Ahsoka? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And now to transition away from the TV corner of the podcast, I now want to turn my attention over and move to the weekend box office. And even since it's Wednesday, I'm not going to go too in-depth into the box office and kind of rehash a lot of stuff, but I did want to kind of go over some things before we get into this brand new weekend and some of the new releases that are coming out as well. But some of the things that I want to highlight in this weekend's box office is, of course, the new reigning defending champion at the box office, knocking off the four-week reign of Barbie, and that is the number one new film out, the DC film Blue Beetle, which grossed $25 million this past weekend. It's now made $27 million domestically, $18 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $45 million at the box office. And even though Blue Beetle did come out number one at the box office, unfortunately, it does seem like it isn't the best setter that this film could have done. And the thing has a lot of things going for it right now. I mean, the fact that you only had the director being able to promote the film right now because the strikes are still going on, the WGA strike, the SAG-AFTRA strike, those are still going on. So the actors are not able to promote this film, which is why you wouldn't be able to get someone like Zolo Moriente, who is out, who is the main lead of this film. He can't go out and promote the movie, which is a shame because this is really a career-making performance for him coming off of the success of him in Cobra Kai. So I was hoping that he could do it, but he can't because of all the strikes that are going on. And I think that kind of have hurt the film's promotion tour for this movie. So it's not getting the same press that something like a Flash or even a Shazam was able to get earlier this year. You're not going to have a red carpet if you can't get your performers out there. So it would make no sense to do that. So it had a few uphill battles to kind of really climb. The fact that it is very much a multicultural film, specifically within the Latino community, really trying to showcase the heritage, the culture of the people that are impacted by that. And I think they do a very good job of telling the story of a Latino family, of a Latino lead. This is the first Latino lead in any major DC studio film, or really any major comic book studio film in general. So there was a lot riding on this, but unfortunately, it is the lowest opening for a DC film since 2020's Wonder Woman 1984. And that, of course, has a big dotted asterisk on it because it came out both in day and date release on HBO Max, of what it was called at the time before becoming Max, and also the fact that it was also the pandemic, and a lot of people were not going to movie theaters, especially in December of 2020. So a lot of people were watching that film at home with their families or by themselves or with their friends. And so the fact that you're the lowest opening since that film, and there's been other films that have come out since then that have had their full theatrical run, is not a very good sign. I mean, the fact that Shazam 2, which imploded at the box office, still made more than Blue Beetle did on its opening weekend with $30 million. Birds of Prey, same situation, $33 million, and that came out a little before the pandemic really shut everything down. Then you had The Suicide Squad with James Gunn, also a day-and-date release both on HBO Max and in theaters, but still was able to come out in theaters with $26.2 million, which, again, isn't great in terms of its own money, but when you look at Blue Beetle, it still made $6 million more than that film did overall, or rather, it made $1 million more than it did on its opening weekend. Then you have The Flash, which came out earlier this year, $55 million. Huge disappointment, but still more than Blue Beetle made. And you also had Black Adam, which made $67 million its opening weekend and is still right now regarded in terms of this kind of stretch of DC films that we're in the last year or so, is going to be still the highest grossing opening weekend of a DC film in the last year, under a year or so. So there's still a lot of stuff to kind of sift through when it comes to Blue Beetle, which is kind of a shame to me because, again, I think this is a fun, enjoyable film, and I'm hoping that we get more of these characters in the DCU with James Gunn and Peter Safran moving forward, and people can still see this film and get these kind of experiences in film for themselves. And so I'm hoping that this film might have some legs, that it could maybe do well. There's not really a whole lot of stuff coming out in these next couple weeks that could rival it, but also I wouldn't be surprised if Blue Beetle dips down to number two or three, and then all of a sudden we get Barbie and Oppenheimer maybe potentially back up at the number one and number two spot again, or it could be Barbie and Blue Beetle and Oppenheimer in those top three spots. But either way, Barbie, I think, would dethrone Blue Beetle to take the number one crown once again. It reminds me very much of what happened last year, where it was very much more of a dearth feel in August last year than very much compared to this year, where there's a lot more films to look forward to in this month, but it was able to still climb back up to the number one spot after having spent a majority of May and some of June at the number one spot and then trugging along for the rest of the summer. It was able to get some movie theaters back for kind of like a redistribution into a large swath of theaters, and it was able to do very well for itself to get back into the number one spot. So for Barbie, it's a week out from losing the top spot. I would not be shocked if it's able to stay there in the next couple of weeks to come. And then moving on to number two, speaking of Barbie, is Barbie, which coming in at number two, which made an additional $21 million at the box office. It's now made $566 million domestically. It's also made internationally $713 million for a worldwide total of $1.2 billion at the box office. It is now the highest grossing film domestically of 2023 so far. It also has made history for Warner Brothers, which is Barbie now owns the highest grossing film in Warner Brothers history in a domestic release window. And it outgrosses The Dark Knight, which came out in 2008 from, funny enough, Christopher Nolan. And it's another big win for Barbie, which just continues to chug along, and make a whole boatload of money for Warner Brothers. And speaking of another film that's made a lot of money, coming at the number three spot is Oppenheimer, which made an additional $10.7 million at the box office. It's now made $285 million domestically. Internationally, it's made $436 million for a worldwide total of $722 million, which again, is just absolutely amazing to think about. It is, as of right now, the highest grossing film of all time that did not open at number one during its opening weekend. It is also the fifth biggest IMAX total in terms of its worldwide of all time. Only films standing in its way are both Avatar films, Star Wars The Force Awakens, and 2019's Avengers Endgame. So that's a pretty high stack of films to try to eclipse. Will Oppenheimer be able to do that? Possibly. I think this film is very much still in demand, and especially with the special format that it is in when it comes to 70mm IMAX, those theaters are still filling up like crazy and pretty much selling out. So I would not be shocked if it's able to maybe climb that chart just a little bit more in the next couple weeks as we kind of wane down the run for Oppenheimer, as it's been well over a month since it first came out in July. So Barbenheimer still trugging along very, very well. And when he combines the two films together in Barbenheimer, in total it has made $2 billion at the box office, and now stands, if you just put it as one big entity, it is right now the number seven highest grossing film of all time. So just an absolutely amazing feat that this phenomenon has been able to pull off, and just both of these films individually have been able to do, has been absolutely outstanding. And then we go on to the rest of the top 10 at the box office. Number four is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which grossed an additional $8.5 million at the box office. It has now made $89 million domestically, $30 million internationally, for a worldwide total of $119 million at the box office. Then coming in at number five is Strays, which is a brand new summer comedy from Will Ferrell, Jamie Foxx, that made $8.2 million at the box office. It's made $9 million domestically right now for its total, $2.2 million internationally for a worldwide total of $11.2 million. Then moving on to the bottom half of the top 10, coming in at number six was Meg 2 The Trench, which made an additional $6.7 million at the box office. Staying at the number seven spot is Talk to Me, which made an additional $3.1 million at the box office. It's now made $37 million domestically, $9 million internationally for a worldwide total of $47 million, which is absolutely outstanding for a film that had only a $4.5 million budget. It's going to be a huge winner for A24 and for summer horror. Then going into the number eight spot was A Haunted Mansion, which made an additional $3 million at the box office. Then coming in at number nine, staying at the ninth spot, is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, making an additional $2.7 million at the box office. And then rounding out the top 10 for this past weekend was Sound of Freedom, which grossed an additional $2.6 million at the box office. So going from 10 to 1 once again, number 10 was Sound of Freedom, number 9 was Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Number eight was Haunted Mansion. Number seven was Talk to Me. Number two, number six was Meg 2 The Trench. Number five was Strays. Number four was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. Number three was Oppenheimer. Number two was Barbie. And defeating Barbie from its 4-week reign, coming in as the new number one king at the box office, is DC's Blue Beetle. So what did you guys think of the box office this weekend? Let me know what you thought down below and leave your thoughts. I'd love to know what everyone thinks of this past weekend's box office. Now to move on to some trending trailers that I want to get into. And there were two ones that I really wanted to talk about. One really major that I'll leave for the ending of this segment. But the first one that I want to talk about is for a film that I barely knew really nothing about. And I finally found out about it and heard about it because of this trailer, and it's for a new Netflix film called Reptile, which is directed by Grant Singer, and it stars an awesome cast that includes Benicio Del Toro, who is also a co-writer for this film, also stars Justin Timberlake and Alicia Silverstone. And the basic premise for Reptile is that it's about a New England detective who works to solve the murder of a real estate agent, and as a result of the case, experiences a reflection upon himself. And again, this is a movie that I had no idea about, so when I hit play on the trailer, I was just thoroughly entertained for what I was able to see. And I'm somebody who is a big, big sucker for anything really kind of murder mystery related, whether it's kind of like a Knives Out or a Clue or Murder on the Orient Express or something a little bit more darker and dreary, and something like, say, Zodiac or Seven or something along those lines, or even something more kind of like a psychological thriller based like Gone Girl. This very much reminds me of something like that, or even something like Prisoners. Something like that is what reminds me of what Reptile is trying to go for. And I'm somebody who's also a huge Benicio Del Toro fan, and so whatever he's in, I will be clamoring to see no matter what. And so to see him take on this role is very interesting, and also to see Justin Timberlake back in an acting role is kind of fun to witness as well. I mean, he's somebody who, again, not the greatest actor in the whole world, but he can definitely act when he wants to and can put on a really good performance. I mean, just go back and see what he was able to do with The Social Network, and he was really good in that movie. And seeing Alicia Silverstone in this is really cool as well. So the whole mystery murder angle of this is exciting to see, and it looks like it's a much more low-key kind of murder mystery than some of the other ones, but I'm excited to see what this one is able to bring to the table. So a nice little surprise that I wasn't expecting, and that gets me excited for this film. It is debuting at the Toronto International Film Festival on September 7th before hitting Netflix on October 6th. So definitely be on the lookout for this film come early October. And then the other trailer that I want to talk about is for another Netflix film, which is on a whole different level than what Reptile is doing. And that, of course, is the latest from Zack Snyder in Rebel Moon, which was written, directed, and shot by the man himself. He did every single aspect of this film, kind of like what he did with his first four-way with Netflix in Army of the Dead, which I very much enjoyed with the likes of Dave Bautista. And this time he has a whole new crew riding with him on this Rebel Moon adventure. It stars Sophia Patella, who, if you recognize the name, she was in films such as Kingsman, The Secret Service. She was also in films like The Mummy. She had a supporting role in Atomic Blonde. She's definitely been around, and she's was also a very big supporting character in Star Trek Beyond back in 2016. So she is very much somebody who has definitely been around the block when it comes to big budgeted films. You also have Charlie Hunnam, you have Mikhail Husman, you have Jaimin Hansu, you have Ray Fisher, Cleopatra Coleman, Jenna Malone, and Skern Froffy, and of course the voice of Anthony Hopkins, who very much narrates a lot of this trailer and is amazing while he does it. And the basic premise for Rebel Moon, if you don't know anything about it, is that it's basically about a universe that is controlled by a corrupt government of the Mother World. The moon of Veldet is threatened by the forces of the Imperium, the army of the Mother World, controlled by Regnant Belaris. Korra, a former member of the Imperium who seeks redemption for her past and the leadership of the oppressive government, tasks herself to recruit warriors from across the galaxy to make a stand against the Mother World's forces before they return to the planet. So that's the basic premise of Rebel Moon, and even if that sounds confusing, I'll try to break it down in even simpler terms in terms of what Zack Snyder is trying to do with this film. So basically, the basic premise behind this is that Zack Snyder always wanted to do his own kind of science fiction. Actually, for a while, this, what is now known as Rebel Moon, was actually going to be an idea that Zack Snyder had for a Star Wars film. And once Lucasfilm was acquired by Disney, that kind of died down. And now, for his next foray with Netflix, Zack decided to kind of rejig this and make it his own kind of sci-fi universe in a way. And that kind of got me excited about it. He's also somebody that's talked about this kind of being a link to also Akira Kurosawa films, which, excuse me, of course, is an inspiration for Star Wars. Also, he loves kind of the team-up films such as The Dirty Dozen, Magnificent Seven, and you get that vibe with this trailer and the story, as it sounds like it's about this ragtag group that tries to defend their home and the people that live there against these forces of evil. So that's kind of the basic breakdown of what the synopsis is basically trying to say, if you didn't get all that. And watching the trailer for this film, I was very excited about this. I'm somebody who has actually become a Zack Snyder fan over maybe the last 5 or 6 years. I think Man of Steel is an underrated masterpiece. I think something like Zack Snyder's Justice League is incredible. I'm a huge fan of Army of the Dead. I actually think it's one of his best films, and not his best film overall, just through and through. It's amazing. I like what he built within that universe as well. So to see him kind of go back over to sci-fi is great to see, and this very much has Star Wars vibes to it, but it also has a lot of different inspirations to it as well, just from watching the trailer, seeing the production design, the worlds that he's building, the language. All of it very much takes kind of different pieces from things that it reminds me of, like Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, also has like a Dune feeling to it as well. All those are kind of coming together within the aesthetic of Zack Snyder, and this looks like a really, really fun, enjoyable time. And from everything that I've heard about this movie and what Zack Snyder wants to do, he wants to build this out to be a huge IP that Netflix can take and run with over the future, really, and really be able to mine this for content. Because one of the things that Netflix really does not have, and they're trying to, I think, really go for, they've tried to go for in the past, is create their own franchises. And really, other than Stranger Things, they really haven't been able to do that to great effect. And I think this could be the first big thing that they might be able to do if everything turns out to be the way that I hope it is, given that Zack Snyder is really putting his all into this movie, or these movies rather, is it was always kind of rumored that this film would be broken up into two parts, and during the trailer it was confirmed that there's going to be a part one and part two, and they're only going to be coming out about 4 to 5 months apart from one another. So it's not like we're going to have to wait where we see one film and then wait a year or two or even three to see the next installment. It's going to be coming out at a very short period of time. So part one is going to be called A Child of Fire, which is coming out December 22nd of this year. And then part two will be coming out on April 19, 2024. And that one is titled The Scar Giver. So it definitely seems like he has the vision idea for what he wants to do with these films. And I'm very excited to see them. Again, the aesthetics, the production design, the effects look incredible. The characters seem very interesting. I love the fact that we get Anthony Hopkins as the voice of kind of this droid, which looks really, really cool. You definitely get also some more Star Wars vibes with the kind of swords that they're wielding. And one's very red, one's very blue, and you can kind of see that inspiration for Star Wars. So all those sci-fi inspirations are coming together with this one film. And I guess for some people to say, oh, this is inspired by this, this is an original, or this is inspired by this, how is this original? And then I always go back, and I know other people do too, and say, well, Star Wars was inspired from Dune and Akira Kurosawa and Westerns, and all these other elements are inspired by other elements. That's how art continues to form. It doesn't have to be that it's a direct continuation of something, or because it's based on something, it's an IP off of something else of its inspiration. This is something original, and I think one of the things I'm very excited for moving into the second half of 2023 with the fall movie season is seeing more original sci-fi. We talk about The Creator from Gareth Edwards. That's an original sci-fi film. And so to see this with Zack Snyder is also very exciting. And it looks like he put his all into it. It looks like Netflix gave him a very good budget. And I always thought that Zack would work well with Netflix. And it seems like he has truly found a home with them. And I'm excited to see what he's able to do with these films moving forward. But I really did like the trailer. I like the ideas for what he's doing with these films, with this potential universe moving forward, and it's got me very excited for part one when it comes out on December 22nd of 2023. What did you guys think about the first trailer for Rebel Moon and also the trailer for Reptile? Were they something that you enjoyed? Were they not? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the final thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is to go into a very exciting directing announcement that came out in the last couple of days, and that was Blue Beetle director Anuel Manuel Soto being given the reins of a new film called Wrecking Crew. And it's going to be starring Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista, and it's basically going to be an action comedy produced by MGM. And one of the things that I really am excited of seeing a lot of these directors who make these big films come out of is being able to give them the opportunity to keep doing that. And even though Blue Beetle is okay, again, not the greatest superhero film, comic book film in the world, which if you want to find out my overall thoughts, you can go back into the podcast. I do have my Blue Beetle review up on the channel. But if overall, I think seeing these directors and what they're able to do, he brought a vibrancy and an authenticity and a fun nature to the film that I think seeing him go with these two big-time leading men and taking on a film like this is right up his alley, and I'm excited to see what kind of flavor he's able to give this film overall. And so I think it's a really good idea, and I'm excited to see what he's going to be doing with this film moving forward. It has no release date yet as of right now, but they do have the two actors in place. They have a director, so once the strike ends, wouldn't be surprised if we get more news about this film moving forward. So what do you guys think about the Blue Beetle director getting this opportunity to direct Wrecking Crew film with Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. But with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bassell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in on to the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal-Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, Return on Investment, investment and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, give you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the podcast solutions, such as Wrestle Attic Radio, WrestleMania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at RealAmbiguous. And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Bissell Samuel, that's BUSSELLSAMUEL, and also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and until next time, keep on screening.